I'm your host, David Nage. This is BaseLayer, where institutional investors come to learn about crypto.
The views, information, or opinions expressed during the BaseLayer podcast series are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of ARKA, where David Nage is a principal. ARKA is not responsible and does not verify the accuracy of any of the information contained in the podcast series available for listening. The primary purpose of this podcast series is to educate and inform. The podcast series does not constitute financial advice or other professional advice or services. Please do your own research.
This is David, and this is your new episode of BaseLayer. Welcome back. I have Sergey, the co-founder of Axelar Network, with me today. Sergey, how are you?
Hey, great to be here. How are you?
Good. This is a reunion of sorts. Again, we've had Ilya, we've had Mark, we've had Robbie, we've had a bunch of people come back on the show over the last, you know, a few weeks here that have been on the show years ago. And everyone is growing up. Everyone's getting older. Crypto does that to you. But this is great because, again, you know, Axelar has grown into a really meaningful part of the ecosystem within digital assets. We'll talk about what Axelar does in terms of being almost like the Stripe of the back end of crypto, where all the things happen in the back end and just makes usable, enjoyable experiences for all of us out there. So before we do that, again, what we'd like to do, Sergey, just as a rehash for people, you know, what did you do before Axelar? How did you get inspired to do this? And then we're going to go right into the mission of what Axelar is doing in the market right now. We're going to talk about some of the partnerships you've done with Immutable and some of the things that you had just announced with Wormhole. But let's get into it. What did you do before? How did you get inspired to build Axelar?
Yeah, so my background is in the cryptography and distributed systems. So I worked on kind of designing various cryptographic protocols for a while. Also was a faculty at the University of Waterloo, kind of ran a research group designing and building various protocols. Prior to Axelar, my co-founder and I worked on the project called Algorand, which is a proof of stake, you know, blockchain that we launched out of Boston with the MIT crew. And as soon as we launched it, it was pretty clear that we're entering the multi-chain world, right? And the Web3 world is going to be multi-chain with many layers across different stacks. And so the need for connectivity in that world is fundamental, and the need for robust decentralized connectivity is fundamental. And so we kind of foresaw that would be a huge problem to solve for the years ahead and kind of decided to focus on that full time.
Amazing. And it's so funny because we're actually having Algorand after you. So it is a reunion again. And so let's get into it. So again, as I said, you know, Axelar really is, if you think of, you know, Web3, what Stripe is for mobile and internet applications, it works on the back end. It connects various networks into one-click experiences for all users. Now, interoperability is something that as an industry, we have talked about for years. For those that, you know, may not understand it. Again, we've talked about this for a long time on the show, but interoperability basically is the ability for, you know, in a very simplistic way for people to understand. If I was using Yahoo email and Sergey was using Gmail, I can send an email from my Yahoo and he can receive it on his Gmail and he can send me back, forth, and so on. This is what we all do on a daily basis. That is just a very small, basic example of interoperability where there is packets of information that are being delivered from one side to another side and back and forth. It's delivery of packets of information that is basically being able to cross different spectrums, whether they're different L1 blockchains, different protocols, et cetera, et cetera. And so Axelar connects 15 plus blockchains spanning consensus methods, including Cosmos and the EVM. It is also customizable and it is also secure. We're going to talk a lot about security there for a second. But one of the things I wanted to draw on here is that Ethereum has built programmable money, as you all said on your blogs and your websites. Axelar is building programmable interoperability. Again, this is one of the big things that has been a sticking point for the growth of crypto. Unlike other cross-chain connectors, Axelar is a proof-of-stake blockchain. It can do anything a blockchain can do. And so what I want to talk about is one of the things that you hit on is that there is automation. Transparent smart contracts built on Axelar automate paths for users, reducing them to a single click. Again, one of the things that we are noticing over the last few months within crypto is there's an emphasis on abstracting away chains, making the UI and the UX much simpler to the everyday person, not just the crypto natives. Talk about how automation in what you were building with Axlar, in your opinion, is so important to the overall UI and UX. And talk to us about certain things that have been really a hotbed topic within crypto for the last few months in terms of intents and resolvers. How does that play into what you're building there?
Yeah, so to your point, I think automation is critical that would allow, you know, users at the end of the day to interact with any application on any chain with one click, right? You know, like you gave a great example, you're sending email, right? Like from one, you know, domain to another. Typically, that email will go through dozens of different networks to reach, you know, my inbox at the end of the day. But I don't think about it, right? And you, as a sender, you don't think about it. You just send it. You have, you know, a destination, and the email kind of goes through these layers of infrastructure and layers of networking and essentially layers of interoperability stacks that will give me a very simple, you know, UX experience. Mm-hmm. In Web3, that's not the case today, right? You know, interacting with Solana is very different than interacting with Ethereum. It's very different than interacting with Cosmos, right? You need to have a wallet for each one of these chains. Today, you're still thinking about like maybe moving your tokens back and forth, paying gas across multiple chains, right? Thinking about different UX experiences, how to back up your keys, and you know what? How do the addresses look differently? So it's a very, very complicated experience, right? And so, yeah, to get it to the next level, we need to abstract all of that away, right? And abstraction comes with programmability of instructions, essentially, right? So all the things that you want to do going from one chain to another, they can be automated as a sequence of code instructions, right? There's nothing that says that you, when you want to deposit an asset from Ethereum to Solana in a particular DEX and, you know, and receive rewards on it, those things need to be manual, right? And so today we have been doing them manually, and actually what we're doing with this programmability layer is allowing anybody to kind of program all these instructions, right? And there are various ways of programming it, like in various models, we can get into those details, but essentially kind of writing down the sequence of instructions that the user would do and executing them on the back end at the networking layer. So at the end of the day, you, from a user's perspective, get a one-click experience, which is chain agnostic, right? So that's one thing. And I think you brought up, you know, an interest in technology called Intents, right? Which is something we have implemented on Axlar and some applications use. And Intents, you know, it's a pretty interesting paradigm that effectively opens up kind of a marketplaces around transaction relay and transaction execution, right? So the basic idea is that you want to do an action, you know, from a chain X to a chain Y. By default, in the networking layer, we have to make sure that action is as secure as possible. Mm-hmm. Right? So we always have to do things like wait for the finality of the source chain before relaying the transaction at the networking layer. We always have to make sure kind of gas is paid everywhere. You know, we always have to make sure the transaction is delivered. So the networking layer will always have to take the most secure path, which is sometimes not the fastest path, right?
Right.
Or not the cheapest. And so Intents allow kind of marketplaces to build on top of the networking layer that would allow somebody to come in and try to, you know, execute these user transactions potentially for additional fee and maybe absorb some latency in the process, right? So instead of for the user having to wait for like 15-minute Ethereum finality to go from Ethereum to Solana, an Intent marketplace like Build on Axlar could allow somebody to come in and fill in the user's transaction in 5 seconds, right? Maybe take an additional whatever penny for doing this, but absorb this latency risk and then wait for the bridge to actually process everything securely and then settle, you know, to the executor, right? Of the order, that's called the filler in many cases with the actual transaction, right? So yeah.
Yeah, I want to give people just a very simplistic way to think about this, because again, mm-hmm. I love this cutting edge side of the technological side of things with Intents and resolvers, because again, the way I think about it, you know, I have kids, and so they use, you know, kind of Google, we have a Google Home thing, and you know, they may want to play, you know, a track or song that they like. And so they verbally say, hey, Google, play Drake, something, something, something. And all of a sudden you hear the song that you're hearing. In the background, and this is something that we all do every day. You use Siri, you use Google, you say, hey, Google, do this, is that. You go on a website, you go to Google and you search for things. These are things that we do every single day. And we type them in human natural language in the way that we normally process, you know, what we're looking for. And in the back end, as you alluded to, even if I say, hey, Drake, hey, Google, play Drake, something, it is doing several processes in the background. It's probably it's resolving that, and it's going to Spotify, or it's going to Amazon Prime, and it's going to the resource, the repository that it exists in. It's finding that exact, you know, kind of structured, you know, I'm saying something unstructured, and it's figuring out in a structured data process to be able to find exactly what I'm looking for. And all this happens in the background, and it's magic. And yeah. What Sergey is alluding to is that crypto has not had that until recently. And so we all think, those that know what's happening right now, that this is going to be a magical year because the technology is taking such a step up. And now you can actually start to use these things in a way that we're all used to. So very excited about that. I want to go, you know, into this notion of bridges. Now, mm-hmm. when Axelor first came out, there was a big, you know, kind of component of interoperability is bridging. Now, for those that are able to, obviously, you know, they've done a little bit of homework on crypto, they've done some research. Bridges have also been a honeypot, if you will. They've been a point of attack. You know, exploiters and hackers have, you know, kind of gone to them and have, you know, done, you know, several things in terms of draining them for millions and sometimes billions of dollars. I would love to hear how, you know, obviously, as you're the forefront of interoperability and obviously connecting 50 blockchains out there, how has you and the team kind of determined the best way forward for having something, you know, in terms of being secure and obviously preventing those types of activities from hitting Axelor? How have you all thought about that for this year and beyond?
Yeah. So first of all, I think it's important to understand that I think a lot of issues with the bridging has been historically because crappy solutions have been rolled out to the market that are not ready, okay, to actually be used, you know, because of demand kind of outpaced the supply in some sense in the interoperability space, right? And so we've seen a lot of centralized bridges that often have like very few, you know, signers that are authenticating all the transactions, and then you put in all the trust like in a couple entities or a couple nodes that you know, take on all the security risks. So, you know, putting that aside, I think we, you know, look at it from the ground up. You know, what does the secure interoperability stack look like? And that really comes down to three layers of security, right? One, you have to start with the base layer. And like Axelor is the only proof of stake powered interoperability protocol out there in the market, right? Proof of stake powered, meaning that it has similar types of security guarantees as other proof of stake networks. So anybody can join, anybody can participate, anybody can, you know, contribute code, contribute validation logic. And so you have a large decentralized network of validators that are supporting the whole protocol, right? And, you know, to compromise anything at the networking layer, you would have to, you know, take over a very large set of validators and a very large economic units, right? So that's the base layer. You have to start with that. You know, on top of it, when you think about bridging and any software for that matter, you do have to have incredibly robust just engineering practices, shipping quality code, right? You know, if you see everything in the crypto space, you know, majority of the attacks are because of like bugs or stupidity that, well, not necessarily stupidity, but like mistakes that have been made along the way. And so, you know, you have to have code audits, right? And we've done over like 50 audits on the Axel network side. We have a multi-million dollar back bounty that anybody can participate and legitimately get rewarded for, you know, finding issues if there are any. We continuously run everything through unit tests, end-to-end tests. So the same types of practices as you have, you know, traditional systems like, you know, Gmails of the world, right? And Google Drives of the world, like they go through rigorous testing before the product is shipped to the users. And I think in crypto, we've been lacking that. And, you know, and at Axelor ecosystem, we've been putting all of those practices in place. And then the final piece I'll mention is the, what you have to do is you have to have things like application layer security add-ons, right? So as an example, if you build an application that does token bridging, well, that application should have things like rate limits, right? Like there is no reason that one transaction should be able to take all the funds out of a specific contract, you know, instantaneously, right? So most of the time you have certain flows and you want to just limit your functionality to within those flows. And so on the security side, that's the approach we took. It's a kind of full stack security approach. And, you know, the results of it, you can actually see in a Uniswap security report that they've done, you know, a very comprehensive multi-month security analysis of all the bridging providers, and only kind of Axel and Wormhole passed the security due diligence, and all the other players have failed their assessment. So I thought that was a very nicely done report that took into account all these layers, everything from the base layer to kind of how the functional, practical security of the network stands. And, you know, I think we're kind of pretty proud of what we have built there.
Yep. And every time you say base layer, I have to charge you some AXL. Nice. I'm kidding. For those that don't know, Axelar does have its own native token, which, again, we'll make sure everyone is up to date on all the things that are happening at Axelar. This is obviously a way for people to kind of get a front row seat to some of the great things that are happening there. But obviously, we always make sure that everyone who listens there has all the information. There are things that have happened that you guys have announced over the last few months, and I'm cognizant of that. There's the actual virtual machine that you've announced there, and we'll make sure everyone has the information about that because that's huge. There was I think it was MasterCard that elected you for a project there. Also, JP Morgan and Apollo tested their cross-chain portfolios, and Axelar was part of that. So Axelar has been in and around a lot of the activity that has happened over the last few months, and we'll make sure that everyone knows about that. Two of the things that I wanted to draw on before we let you go, you just announced this today when I had you on, which is fantastic, that there was a collaboration with Wormhole for liquid staking. Now, we've had Sharam on from Eigenlayer. We just had Ilion from Near. A lot of people are talking about liquid staking. You know, for those that, again, don't know, is that when you participate in these proof of stake networks, you are, you know, basically you're putting up a certain amount of stake of the digital asset to secure the network. And you typically receive, you know, some yield in return for that because you're putting, you know, capital and allocations at, you know, at risk, if you will. But when you do that, you effectively, for the historical period of time, you usually can't do anything with it. It's there, and it's just there to obviously ensure the security. However, liquid staking, as you can all listen to with Sharam, with Eigenlayer, and with Ilya, there is this new kind of capacity in the market that allows you to use those staked assets and then use them for other purposes. And so this is an important part of the maturation of the environment here in digital assets. So talk to us about why this collaboration with Wormhole is so important for that, and talk to us about some of the implications there.
Yeah, so essentially Lido, you know, is one of the, you know, larger providers of staked ETH, right? An opportunity for people to easily stake ETH on the Ethereum chain. They're looking to expand and make staked ETH available on other ecosystems, right? And so they were looking to go to kind of Cosmos previously and actually help them, you know, to facilitate bridging of staked ETH to Cosmos. But a new ecosystem that they wanted to target was Binance, right? And BNB chain in particular, because, you know, I think they're seeing a lot of demand and a lot of user activity there that would benefit from availability of staked ETH there. And they put out, in some sense, request for proposals to find the best solution that meets the constraints and the objectives of their kind of governance and their community, right? And, you know, they had very strong requirements around security, around like vendor lock-in properties, around functionality, and so on and so forth. And so, you know, putting our differences aside, we decided to kind of partner up with Wormhole and kind of create a joint proposal where the security and the benefits of both bridging providers get kind of put together in, you know, and combined, and you know, bridge the stake ETH through this kind of a aggregate, in some sense, bridge, right, between the two providers. Again, I think in this case, this was because given the RFC, it was clear that this would be really the best solution for the Lido and for the staked ETH, you know, community. And so we put a proposal together. Fortunately, the Lido community really liked the proposal, so it won by, you know, huge margin compared to all the other proposals. And you know, now we're excited to get into the implementation phase and you know, help roll this out.
Amazing. And the other thing that was recently announced was you were chosen by Immutable to partner as well too. So depositing, withdrawing funds between Immutable, ZK, EVM. Again, for those that don't know it, Robbie was just on the show from Immutable about 2 weeks ago. So if you look at the catalog history, you can find that recording there and you can find out more about that, which is powered by Polygon. And again, Mark Boyeron was just on with Polygon. So we talked a lot about ZK EVM. So you can find out more about that. And so, and Ethereum just got a lot easier thanks to Axelar. So depositing, withdrawing funds, you know, again, as Robbie alluded to on the show, big push into gaming this year, 250 some odd games coming to market. Got some big ones out there that, you know, aim to really be AAA rated quality. People are going to potentially be, you know, putting in capital to play these games, buy the NFTs, the artifacts, et cetera, and then withdrawing them. So what role does Axelar play with Immutable on this?
Yeah, so as you said, I think Immutable is gaining quite a lot of traction as the sort of the gaming chain, right? Like lots of games are coming there. For gamers, it's very simple. No matter what you do, you want to have easy on and off ramps, right? Both with respect to payments, but also for your tokens potentially down the line, or gaming tokens if you have any, right? And so Axel being the kind of universal gateway of connectivity, you know, is connecting Immutable as one of the chains. That means it will be automatically interoperable with 50 plus other ecosystems that we connect. So from any of the other chains that connected through the Axel stack, with one click, you'll be able to onboard into Immutable and vice versa, right? So that means having interoperable tokens being issued on Immutable as an example, right? Mm-hmm. So you can, if you're creating a game and you have a token and you want that token to be, you know, available to wallet holders of other chains, you could build that into the functionality. You can leverage all this programmability at the interoperability layer to make sure somebody, you know, that has a wallet on Ethereum can in one click, like, you know, enter your game, deposit their funds, participate, and, like, you know, trade the tokens if they choose to be. So super excited for that partnership. And I think gaming is, you know, is a huge category that we're seeing explode in Web3 overall.
Agreed. So what we like to do at the latter part of our time with you is, you know, what are some of the things for listeners to, you know, keep an eye on for the next 6 to 12 months from Axelar? What are some of the things that you're excited about that are going to be, you know, potentially coming to market with you guys? Would love to hear just a few thoughts on that.
Yeah. So one, you know, super exciting product that we're kind of rolling out right now is this notion of interchain tokens. You know, we already said that you can issue your tokens on multiple chains using the Axelar protocol. But we're thinking of one step ahead of, and how do we enable these things to be done with one click for developers, right? Not just users using it, but for developers to launch their token in one command across, like, you know, 50 chains, right? And so we have a product built on top of the Axel network that's getting launched. It's called Interchain Token Service. It's been built by the community. It's really amazing. It's going to simplify the developer experience launching chain agnostic, you know, tokens. As you already mentioned, we have a, you know, Axelar virtual machine that's going to go live over the coming months. I think that's exciting. That opens up opportunities to program integrations to the Axelar much more efficiently, right? So if I'm building my own chain, or L1, L2, it has a custom consensus, it has any other custom contracts, I can build one connection to Axelar, and that automatically makes me interoperable with, you know, dozens of other chains already connected through the Axelar stack. So it's kind of a one-to-many gateway that you can plug in using the VM. You know, it's going to be a very simple framework that you can essentially use in an open source framework to extend interoperability to your own chain, right, from the ground up. So I think that's going to be, you know, incredibly exciting. Yeah, and I think, you know, a lot of the partnerships with gaming, with enterprises, like you mentioned, RWAs, some of the things that you mentioned, like JP Morgan and some of the projects there, I think, you know, incredibly exciting for the few years.
That's amazing. As I said, it's really great to have, you know, founders like Sergey back on the show after about 3 years, last time I had you on. So many things were theoretical. You know, all of you were so excited about what the future could be and how this all could, you know, interplay with each other. And now it's real. And now things are happening. And so, as I said, again, with the idea of just one simple part of the technological stack with intent, as we alluded to, there is a world here that the user experience is going to have leaps and bounds improvements this year into next. And so Axelar is part of that. Sergey, thank you for coming on the show. We'll hopefully have you on again soon, and all the best.
Awesome. Great to be here. I'm great chatting as always.
Thanks for listening in to Baselayer. If you like the show and all the different guests that we've brought on, please give a like and subscribe on Apple or Spotify or wherever you do listen to the podcast. Also, if you want to have a conversation or reach out to me, you can reach me out on Twitter at David J. Nage, and let's talk there. Or also you can find me on LinkedIn, and I look forward to having great conversations with you all about digital assets.